This is a Dece World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Well, hello there. I'm Andrew from Pants Pending Studios, and I want to share with you from the good book of never-ending random discussion.
Again, I trust you are putting your valuables in the center of your living rooms as previously instructed. Good Lord, I hope that's previously instructed.
The never-ending random discussion is a collection of funny and interesting people sitting down to be random.
Why is she naked?
Those eyes
Jesus.
Are so piercing.
It's...
I forgot that she had tiny little animal eyes, like beady little black eyes. Oh dear God.
Why is she covered in frosting? That's weird. Good. That's like a cake thing. That's not for donuts.
Anything can happen, and anything does happen. Not that I'm sexist, but kitchens need to stay in women. I went with it.
Kitchens need to stay in women.
That's
Andrew Reisenhuber, 2016.
Find the show at celebrategeek.com/nerd. Tune in and thank me later. Pants pending.
Stop looking at me in the eye when I'm talking. I'm a celebrity! I'm Burr Martin from the Burr Martin Experience. Never heard of me? You remember a while ago when every time you opened up your internet browser, there was some chubby dude in a white tank top making fun of his daughter's selfies? That was me. So the good news is I'm hosting a podcast, which is audio. That means you don't have to look at me. I'm also a geek and have been into comics for as long as I can remember, so as the internet dubbed me Selfie Dad, I'll be talking to parents and kids about growing up, being geeks, and how they got to be where they are now. Look, it's only an hour every other week, and since my wife is listening, the podcast is kid-friendly and family-approved. Let's call it your PG-13 podcast, but I should probably say a little more Bad News Bears and a lot less Shark Boy and Lava Girl. So look for the Burr Martin Experience every other Sunday night where you can find me on pantspending.com, iTunes, or wherever quality podcasts are found. Yeah, every other week. What am I, a machine?
Quit looking me in the eye! I see you doing it! Where's my brown M&Ms? Just the brown ones.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Day drunk, which is my best form. Day drunk Dece, the triple D.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Moscow Brewing in Moscow, Idaho, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, co-owners of Moscow Brewing, Andy Severson and Leah Hart, with special guest co-host Katie Wardall. And now your host, he's got brews and other area codes, Dece Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. Thank you for hanging out for another episode of The Social Hour. I am here in Moscow, Idaho. Did I pronounce that correctly this time?
You did pronounce that correctly.
Okay.
Good job.
Yeah, thank you. Apparently, this isn't Russia. I don't know how to pronounce places in Idaho. We are in Moscow, Idaho at Moscow Brewing Company. I am joined special guest co-host Katie Wardell. Katie, how are you?
I'm good. It's Wardall.
Sorry. Okay. Jesus, I should know how to pronounce your last name. Do you know how to pronounce my last name?
It's Quesadilla, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. See, nailed it. We have co-owners Andy Severson and Leah Hart, who is also one of the brewers here at the brewery, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys. We're in your home right now. We came here to see you guys and check out the brewery, so we appreciate you making
we
time.
We do need to set the record straight. It is Severson.
Severson.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
See, I'm bad at
like,
I can't pronounce anything today.
Don't let it happen again.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I won't. I'll just try and I'll talk less. You guys take over. Katie, you got this.
And go.
We came down here to check out the brewery. I've been trying to get down to this area and check out what's going on down here. So we appreciate you guys taking the time. Give us the address here, guys. I should know. We just drove here, but shout out the address so everyone is aware.
Yeah, so it's 630 North Almond Street. For those of you that are familiar with Moscow, it is right behind Rosar's and a block up. So a little bit out of the way, but a cool little spot if you want to come check it out.
Okay. I don't think I've ever been down here before at all in my life, actually. So
yeah,
it doesn't seem out of the way to me. It just seems like part of the town. So
yeah.
Is there more of the town? We just came in from off the 195.
No, this is it. This is the best part.
Just the town ends right here.
All right,
yeah.
Cool, perfect.
You found it.
So you guys have been running this brewery for about 6 months now, you said. Is that correct?
Yeah. We took over in January from the previous owner and then have been open since March.
Okay. Now, there's some history with the brewery. There was a previous iteration of Moscow Brewing before you guys, and now you guys have taken over and kind of changed it a little bit, right?
Yeah. We actually kind of trace our roots back to the 1890s in Moscow with the original Moscow Brewery.
Wow.
In fact, we have a picture on the wall of the original Moscow Brewery that's over by the taps over there, which was located just a couple of blocks from here.
That's cool.
Yeah, really cool. And it actually burned down in the early 1900s. The head brewer got like syphilis or something and went crazy and lit it on fire.
It's like The Shining.
No one fact checked that.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
That's a great story. It's like they just shut their doors and they moved away happily ever after. That's actually what happened. Just a better story.
Right, yeah.
They burned it for the insurance money, I think.
Right. Well, at least you guys have something to look forward to.
Right. The syphilis.
The syphilis and
right.
A bird, you know.
No, so, you know, that all happened, and then more recently it was revived by the previous owner in 2012, and he was open until 2016 when he decided to move on to other things and spend more time with his family, and
okay.
That's kind of when we came in.
So it was kind of was it like a turnkey operation then for you guys, just kind of?
Yeah, it was pretty close. A lot of the stuff that we have done here in the time that we've been open has really just been to tweak what he was already doing.
Okay.
The way that it worked out, we were able to take over his brew house that he had and his, you know, equipment and all that stuff. And so when we got in here, once all the licensing and all the, you know, the federal and state mess was sorted out, we were able to brew immediately, which we're very fortunate to be able to do.
Sure. Yeah.
I think one of the benefits we had is that we had actually come as patrons in the past, and so we were already familiar with the setup and what was going on, and we were already familiar with maybe some of the things that we knew we wanted to improve right off the bat.
Okay.
And so it kind of, we didn't come in blind, but we had some ideas of what we wanted to keep, what we wanted to tweak slightly,
right. And
then things that we wanted to change completely.
Yeah.
So
that's a good perspective as a patron, because you can, you know, you come in and you know what worked for you as someone who enjoyed the business, and then, you know, some of the downfalls potentially, and can kind of look at more objectively than just as someone who's running the business and not necessarily seeing it from the outside looking in.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we, coincidentally, I just realized this, that we probably had our first brewery meeting in Tyler, Texas, in 2012. We had been planning to open a brewery on our own for a long time
before this
came together, and we were in kind of the final pre-stages of planning when this came available, and we realized that it fit what our goals were.
That's cool.
And so we kind of shifted our idea a little bit to fit into here.
Yeah, just kind of massaged it into the timing and everything.
Yeah. As far as, you know, opening a brewery goes, we were very fortunate in that sense to be able to take over an existing brewery, because it cut down the length of time with paperwork and, you know, registering with the different agencies drastically. So it allowed us to kind of enact our dream a lot faster.
What was the kind of impetus of wanting to do a brewery originally?
I think a lot of it came by accident. I don't know. We didn't, Andy and I are brother and sister. We didn't grow up in a family that drank beer or anything like that. It wasn't in our background at all. And then my husband, Aaron, his dad was a home brewer. And we also have a cousin who was a home brewer. And so that kind of sparked some interest. Aaron and I started homebrewing when we were in college, and then Andy started homebrewing slightly after that.
Okay.
And kind of all at once, we kind of had this click moment where we realized, hey, this is super fun. We enjoy it. We're making a fairly good product as far as we could tell. And, you know, your own beer is always the best beer you've ever had.
Yeah.
But I think we kind of could see just it aligning in a way that we hadn't considered previously in life. But yeah, it was almost 5 years ago now that Aaron and I lived in Texas at the time. Andy came down to visit, and we had a sit down meeting, like, how are we going to nail this out? And we had a 5-year plan of who was going to do what. And at that point it was to open a brewery from scratch.
Yeah.
And so part of that plan was for Aaron and I to move back to Idaho. And then turns out we didn't need to start from scratch. This became a great opportunity for us, and looking back, it turned out to be the right decision.
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, just, you know, timing makes sense sometimes. So you guys were originally homebrewers, as most brewery people are.
Yeah.
Tell us about your first beers you made.
Oh, okay.
That's fun. We actually might still have some old bottles.
Ooh, it's like aged now. It's perfection.
We actually do. We should maybe break one of those out.
That sounds
after
fun.
After the break.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
we have at least a couple of mine. Okay. I remember very well my first one. It was going to be it was a nut brown ale.
Oh, I like that. I like where this is going already.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was shooting for the stars, and so I put some brown sugar in it against, like, the strong discouragement from the homebrew shop.
Sure.
That I was buying from. And then I think I was texting Mom or maybe Leah about it, and my phone auto-corrected to butt brown. And so I made a butt brown ale, and tasted very accurate.
Like not an ironic name.
Right. Yeah.
Perfect.
Perfect naming. Yeah.
So that one's not on the menu anymore, I take it.
Oh no, well, we still have some of that.
It might have
think.
A resurgence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll dig some out.
Are you going to call it butt brown?
Why not?
Yeah.
I think you should. Absolutely.
If the name fits.
Yeah. Sure. It's good marketing.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
So how many of the original recipes transferred over to what you guys make now?
Actually, so we have 4 taps, but we produce right now. It's different now because we just are putting out a couple new ones. But we have about 7 or 8 recipes that we're cycling through or have been cycling through, just rotating the 4 taps. But what we have on right now, 3 of those, the Kolsch, the Northwest IPA, and the Scotch are all original homebrew recipes or founded in that. And the pale is the only one on right now that we made a pale at home, but we actually revised that recipe when we opened.
Okay.
And then I can count at least 2 or 3 others that were our homebrew recipes. So the Kolsch, all of our beers have some sort of homebrew story, but the Kolsch is one that we made to get our dad to stop drinking whatever crap he was drinking.
Yeah.
And so we made the Kolsch, and we called it the gateway beer because we just got him slowly out of that and could provide him a keg. Even as homebrewers, we just set him up with a keg in his garage so he could enjoy some good beer, in our opinion, at least.
God,
but
if I had kids, I would want you guys to be my kids. Someone just set me up with just a keg in my garage.
You gotta have standards in life. Yeah,
that's pretty much all I need. I think like that's my level. That's my standard.
Yeah. So. But we were very fortunate. We are using all of our own recipes. We decided not to move forward with any of the recipes that we purchased with the business at this point. We have them all, and we might take pieces and parts, but we're kind of letting that legacy live out with the previous owner.
Yeah, it's nice to put your own stamp on it, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And the previous owner was very loved in Moscow, and still we get a lot of people asking about him, wanting to know what he's doing now. He was just a great guy and a great advocate for beer. And so to a certain extent, we want him to, maintain his legacy here. Sure. And some of that was the recipes that he made and the very unique styles that he had. And even if we follow those recipes to a T, we're different brewers. We're going to make them differently.
Yeah.
And it's not going to taste the same. And it certainly won't taste as good as the memory. We'd like to leave that to be something that's his.
For sure, I could see that, because people would come in and have the old beer, and they'd be like, that's not the same.
Right. You guys didn't do it right.
You
tainted my beer. What did you do? Yeah. So here's a fun question I always like to ask brewers who usually drink good craft beer. Mm-hmm. What is your go-to cheap beer? Your favorite cheap beer?
Cheap beer. Mine currently has to be some PBR.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, this girl over here.
I don't know. I feel like... I mean, PBR is okay, but PBR is, that's like hipster beer now, right? Like, it's got this resurgence now.
It's actually like a...
Yeah, but
like
if you're an old lady like us...
Yeah, but I mean, so...
We liked PBR before it was cool.
Yeah. That's a thing a hipster would say.
Like,
Dang it! At least I didn't say Ranye.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know you, I'll give you that. But I have to stay true to our roots for Craigmont, Idaho, and say that it's Keystone Light.
Okay.
And when we go back to the town we grew up in is 600 people, right? And they do a summer festival every year, and we try to go back as often as we can. And you drink Keystone Light when you're up there. Or if it's Saturday night and you're feeling fancy, you Bud Light. But
oh, shit, that's real fancy.
That is fancy. Yeah, right?
Maybe
yeah.
even in a bottle.
So,
what?
Nah,
just maybe. A tall can, just like a 24-ounce can.
Yeah, get a tall
like
boy in there.
Like those aluminum bottles?
Yeah.
Right, like they serve at baseball games so people don't throw them at a pitcher's head. Yeah.
And I mean, I would drink Keystone Light all day, and the nice thing about it is you can.
That's exactly. That is also
right.
true.
Just flavored water.
Right. Yeah. So
I don't know what the flavor is they add to it.
I don't know either.
It's pee. It's
don't,
pee.
Yeah. You don't want to know.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the secret ingredient. Yeah. It's so interesting because like this is beer adjacent, but one of the first things I ever got drunk on was Old English.
Yeah.
And I still have a love in my heart for like Old English.
Yeah.
I still will drink it occasionally, and I genuinely enjoy it.
Yeah. There's so many, I mean, you drink, you eat, you do whatever because of memories.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true.
Well, and I don't know. I just don't feel like I'm a snob about craft beer. Like, I love beer and I prefer craft beer. But if we're hanging out with friends and somebody hands me a Keystone Light, I'm going to drink it or PBR.
What if they hand you a Miller Lite?
Oh, see, now we're getting deviating a little bit. Yeah, like I might be a little snobby, but
well, listen, there's a difference between snob and preference, though. You know, you don't have to like every type of beer. You can have a preference on what you want to drink.
I think that's true. And what is it? The glass, the champagne of beer. What's that one?
Miller. That's
Miller. Is it High Life?
Yes, High Life.
Yeah, in college, that's what we did on Sundays. Like, you go get...
Because you thought you were fancy.
Yeah, like, you're just, you know, celebrating...
Pinky up.
Celebrating
the
High Life on Sundays.
Yeah.
So I'd drink one of those, and I would love it.
That's why you got that.
Right. Champagne of beer, champagne, same thing.
Same thing, yeah. It's bubbly.
Yeah.
It's fine. So what about on the other end of the spectrum, if a craft beer, and not necessarily, I mean, obviously you guys' beer is the best. Besides that, where do you go for, what's one of your favorite kind of craft beers? And we'll say local, like Northwest. You don't have to say a neighbor in town.
Hmm. Man, there's so many beers now. I don't even know.
We drink such variety.
Yeah.
It's not Northwest, but I am a fan of a Dale's Pale Ale from Oscar Blues
every now and again.
But we're thankful in this area. We have a pretty good market for just a good variety of what's going on. We don't have the best in the world, but for being a pretty small town in North Idaho, I think we can get our hands on some.
So many, yeah. I don't even know that we drink the same beer in, like, 2 or 3 weeks or a month.
That's why I'm having trouble coming up with a good answer for that question, because a lot of times we'll go to the store and you can like build your own six pack, or who buys just one six pack, but you can build your own. And so you drink, you know, we'll open a can and share it or whatever, and just try to get our hands on as many different unique flavors or just a standard one that we know we love.
The only one that I can think of recently, which would have been like a year or two ago now was when we first started getting distribution for a Ballast Point and Sculpin arrived in Moscow.
Oh. The original IPA, because they do all the different ones now, like the grapefruit.
I think the
all
first time we had the grapefruit, we were pretty sold on that too. Yeah.
But then, like, I think it was right after that or maybe right before that, they sold out. And so as soon as we figured that out, we're like, well.
That's the worst.
Okay.
If they sold out. It was like $1 billion. I'd be I would sell my.
You can't blame them for it.
No,
for
that. No.
But you hesitate a little bit when you reach for it in the
store. I can't blame them at all. If somebody offered us, I don't know, it'd have to be like at least $50 million, I think. But
minimum.
Right now. Yeah. I would take it. And I would go open another brewery and do even cooler shit.
Right.
Like, true, yeah, for sure.
You know, I'm not going to be above the money, and it's a little obscene what they got.
Oh,
But I only don't buy it because it's not going to, like, craft brewers anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's my only hang up with it.
So how many breweries do you guys have in the area now?
There are three, and they
in Moscow. Three in Moscow.
Yeah, three in Moscow, one in Pullman. But the three in Moscow, I mean, you could throw a crowler and hit them.
Really?
They're
can
just
we try?
Full or
can we try that? We should do that.
It should probably
be
at least
on your
half
arm.
Full.
Yeah, get some weight behind
right.
it.
Right, yeah, you need a little oomph.
But yeah, they're right down here, and they are right across the street from each other.
Really?
Perfect.
Yeah.
So how does a town like this do with, obviously, fairly well, but do with three breweries?
It was kind of unique, because right around the time that Moscow Brewing Company was closing down for a short period of time was right when the other two opened within the same, I don't know, I want to say 6 month period, maybe not quite that close.
It was the same year for sure.
But so it went from a one brewery town, which was Moscow Brewing Company, and then it was a two brewery town with the other two breweries, and then we reopened. So now we're three breweries. And so I think that's only been the case for the last 6 months since we've been open. And so we're not quite sure the long-term effect of that, but we definitely know that we've been well supported, and we know that the other two have been as well. And if you're a beer lover, you go to a place and you want to go to all the breweries.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the fact that we're within a block and a half of each other or less,
stumbling distances, I like to call it.
We get people who, what are you doing today? And they're like, oh, we're just visiting the breweries. We're like, perfect. Yeah. Sounds like us on vacation.
That sounds like a great day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all three are so different in their approach and what they're trying to accomplish that so far it seems like there is room for all of us. I think just like the rest of the industry, the bubble's going to burst at some point, and who knows what will happen then. But each brewery does try to just market themselves quite a bit differently. So,
and we are somewhat unique to the other two in town in that we are extremely small on our one barrel system. And we do taproom sales only, no distribution at this point, soon to change. But that has brought us a unique clientele as well, because people know that if you want Moscow Brewing Company, you have to come to the source.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is fun for us because people will seek us out.
Yeah, definitely. Excuse me, I was choking on myself. I just had too many good questions coming out. I feel like that's really good at my job. It's funny what you said, Andy, about the bubble, because there's recently in North Idaho, in Coeur d'Alene and Post Falls, two breweries have recently are going to shut their doors.
Yeah, yeah.
Slate Creek and Downdraft.
Yep.
So, you have to, it's interesting to see, you're starting to see the effect of, Downdraft basically said, hey, the competition's a little stiffer than we thought. They're just, not to say they couldn't have probably stuck it out, but maybe not everyone's heart's in it either.
Yeah.
As it gets harder, you kind of have to double down a little bit more. So long-term, what's the goal for you guys?
Yeah. Well, we obviously think about this a lot. And even coming into this, as we were hammering out our business plan and like our projections and those sorts of things, you have to think hard about the future and if it makes sense for you. And we're kind of the old tradition of brewery, I think, in that we're home brewers, we love beer, and we thought, what the heck, let's take a crack at this commercially. Yeah. I feel like you see a lot of people now that get into it for the money and think, oh, this is an emerging industry, and it's so easy to make your money back and sell out for huge profits. And so you get people into it that don't love it, And that's where it sort of like taints it. And that'll, that's what will eventually burst the bubble. And I think what you'll end up with are, you'll get back down to the cream of the crop and people who just love the industry and stay in it.
Right. And I think you're right. Most of the, you know, the majority are, of the people who sustain the bubble burst will be the best of what's out there. I mean, but the unfortunate part is you have so many people that are out there just opening breweries and you get subpar beer. And then you have people who go try craft breweries and they try a brewery that's not that great. And that's kind of their stamp of what craft breweries are and craft beer is.
And we, our goal just with everyone that comes into our tap room is to have a conversation about beer. They're here to seek out beer. And so we, even when we travel to other breweries, and I'll lump like tap houses into that too.
Sure.
You know, you'll have a waiter or a waitress and you'll ask them, well, what hops are in this? You know, what malt is it? If it's not a brewery, if it's a tap room, you know, what brewery is it from? Where is that located? And they don't know.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that's just one of the things that also dilutes the industry is when you have interactions with people that don't know or don't care and don't care to know.
Right.
And so when people come in here, you know, I'm going to ask you what beer you like. I'm going to show you what beers we have. And I'm going to guide you through the process of finding one of our beers that you're going to love.
Well, exactly, it's more personal. And I think
people are looking for an experience. I mean, I know that I do. Like breweries. I want to try new stuff and try something new. And
And this is a very intimate setting. I mean, on a busy night, we'll have standing room only and you're forced to meet new people. We have, you know, we have people striking up conversations who have never talked before, and we have a ton of people. I mean, if anyone behind the bar in our brewery is an owner, it's just the three of us. We don't have any staff.
Yeah.
And so we know the ins and outs of what's going on. We know what's coming up next. We know what ingredients each one is made with. And so you, if you have that beer nerd who just wants to know everything, we're going to speak your language. If you're someone who it's your first time in the brewery or in a brewery, we want to make sure that you have the best experience possible so that when you move forward, you could say, you know, it all started when I had that first pint at Moscow Brewing Company, and people were knowledgeable, they were friendly, and it was a great experience.
Well, Katie can probably talk about that. I mean, you're serve beer every day to people, you know, at a
brewery. I love getting people to try beer. Like, ask them, what style do you normally prefer? What do you order when you go out? And then I just give them a bunch of tasters, and I don't tell them what I'm giving them. Because you tell them right away, oh, it's an IPA, or it's this or that. Their brain immediately goes, no, 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 no.
I've
I don't like IPAs.
Before,
I'm like, no, honey, just put it in your mouth. You'll be fine. And then half the time, they love an IPA. And I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so true, because if, you know, if it's like if you tell a kid it's vegetables, they don't want to eat vegetables. But you put it in the shape of a dinosaur and tell them it's candy, all of a sudden they want to eat it. They don't know what it is. They'll just, you know, it's like they'll, your brain, like Katie said, it just wants, doesn't, I'm not a big IPA drinker, but I'll try any beer because I have a crippling alcohol problem. But the
clearly.
I'm going to drive to Moscow for this, so I'm just kidding. People aren't adventurous, especially people who are not, you know, craft beer lovers will just try beer. You know, they just want to try beer and try new things. People who are not as adventurous or not used to that, you kind of have to really ease them in.
Yeah.
You know, when they look at your beers and, you know, like right now, I'm currently drinking the scotch from Moscow Brewing here, which is delicious, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Very copper color, something like that could scare someone, you know, who's used to pouring out a beer that's near translucent. So
you don't ever know what kind of historical trauma someone carries with them in terms of beer drinking, because just that one bad beer that or subpar beer that was a certain color or looked a certain way or that was flat or old or whatever, you know, people remember those things and they don't want to try them again. So anything that's similar, they're hesitant, but
yeah. Well, and like Katie was saying, you know, a great tactic when you're trying to expose people to beer in a cool way is don't tell them what you're giving them, you know, and just ask that next question: do you like it or do you not like it?
Right.
I do like it. What do you like about it? You know, where are you? Are you malty? Are you hoppy?
Yeah.
You know, do you not like any flavors at all?
Yeah.
And then to have that conversation with them, just Saturday night, I had probably an hour and a half long conversation with a young couple that didn't know that hops can present different flavors in the beer across varieties, and also just across if you use it for bittering or for flavor or for nose, you know, the aroma.
Right.
And so when we started talking about that and we tried, they had already got a flight and had a couple of pints. But before they left, we started talking. And so I gave them more tasters and they were tasting the beer in a whole new way. And the lady left, you know, she came in being a wine drinker. She only came in here because her husband wanted to drink beer. But she left being excited to try other beers.
That's my favorite thing.
Yeah, and that's cool. that's what we love, and that's what we want to do. We want to make really great beer because the quality and the consistency is the most important. But then for people to come in here and feel like they can learn about it and take useful information with them, so wherever they go have other beers, they have a more enjoyable experience in craft beer in general.
Well, I think even with craft beer now, it's so popular, people still don't even know what they're doing. They don't know what they're drinking. So even when they come into breweries like this, they're still convinced they only like pales, or they just want something super light like a Kolsch or a blonde.
Right. Or I can't drink more than 70 IBUs because that's too bitter.
Right.
Which is funny because it doesn't mean that because that number gets to a certain point, it doesn't really fucking mean anything.
Well, also balanced out with what else is in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a 70 IBU can be a lot of things depending on what else, how you're making that beer.
When I use the example, can I say where you work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so like I use Iron Goat as an example because when we had gone there in the past, I loved it because I would go in there and I would see an IPA up there that was 8.5% and 125 IBUs, and I thought, I want this. I need to try this because this is extreme beer for what I was used to. And it was so shocking the first few times how balanced it was. And that was my first time realizing that the malt and the hops can balance each other. And so 125 IBUs doesn't mean anything unless you know the rest of the recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
The rest of the story. Our Impaler is my favorite IPA that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Which is super high in IBUs and ABVs. But when you taste it, it's more malty because it just takes away all of the hoppiness.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's the best thing about a craft beer is the, you know, for a long time, things like wine and things like, and you got a lot of credit for having this, this rich history and what it takes to create it. And I'm like, at the end of the day, wine's not that really that hard to make. I mean, you can make it in a steel toilet in prison. so
would it recommend?
I'm not saying you do it that way. That's, you know, most wineries don't succeed that route.
Right. Definitely don't go to prison to start your wine.
Yeah.
Career.
That's like, you know, only about.
But it's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah. About, I mean, conservatively, like maybe 35% of wineries do that. you know, maybe 40. I don't know. I haven't looked at the numbers recently. But with beer, there's so many options and so many flavor options, the way people are exploring beer and the way, you know, the balance of making it work out. Like, I'm really into, you know, you said you guys used to make you tried to make a nut brown.
Right.
A good nut brown is actually probably my favorite style of beer. But I've had ones that I would never want to drink again. And then I've had ones that I absolutely love. So it's not just because it's that style means they're all going to be, it's an umbrella and they're all going to be great.
Right.
But it's fun to watch people play with beers. Now, I think we're getting into a really fun experimental stage with beers. Because we've ran out of problems as a country. So we're just like, we'll put cucumber and cumin in this beer. I'm like, screw it. But no, it's fun. Have you guys had any experimentation that you're working with on really, you know, unique styles of beers or interesting projects?
Yeah. I mean, the wheat beer that we have coming up that we've already brewed is kind of a cool one. And then also the kind of winter seasonal we're doing.
Yeah. As homebrewers, one of the piece of the puzzle we left out earlier is Andy and I homebrewed separately, and then eventually we lived together for a few years, and so we'd brew together, and that's when we really developed some of the recipes that we have on tap now. But we loved experimenting with different flavors and different additives. So we'd make an IPA, and then, you know, there was mint in the garden, and so we'd put half of it with mint or half of it with jalapenos or throw some peaches in or just whatever we had. We just wanted to experiment with those flavors. And so we're just now kind of bringing that experimenting flair into the commercial side. We wanted to get set with our staples first.
Sure.
But yeah, we're soon to release a wheat ale that has some rye malt in it.
Interesting. I love any beer local. With yeah. rye. Rye so, is a great base for
yeah,
beer.
Yeah, we're getting this rye out of Ritzville. It's located, malted at Palouse Pint, Spokane. Okay. Yeah. So, and then the one that we're really excited about is actually another homebrew recipe, but it's more of like a Christmas ale. It's super dark, really thick and creamy porter, but it has tons of like gingerbread spices in it.
When is that coming out?
Stay tuned.
Are we gonna have to come back down here?
So we're actually brewing that this weekend for the first time on the commercial end, and it's just a really fun beer.
It sounds amazing.
It's not just your, we love our stout that we have on as well, but this beer is just going to be something unique that that we can do because we're on a one barrel system. So yeah. we can play around as much as we want and we get to do those sorts of things.
So, we'll talk about that a little more after the break when we're going to taste the beers, but tell us about that, how, you know, with such a small system I feel like, and you know, you guys probably talked about it a lot more. There's some advantages to that because one of my favorite breweries in Spokane brews off a little smaller system, but they're constantly able to crank out new stuff. Mm-hmm. So they kind of have their staples that they keep, you know, if you want the espresso stout or you want the amber, like you're going to see them almost all the time. But since they brew off a smaller system, they have the ability to crank out these smaller batches of just experimental stuff. So every time you go, you can get your staple or you can find something new to try. So how do you guys use that, you know, to your advantage to say, hey, well, you know, we have this small window. Can we toss something in there that's a little off the wall this week?
There are pros and cons for sure. I mean, that is the pro, that we're very flexible because at any given time we're brewing 2 kegs.
Yeah.
And so if we just want to do something wild, it's just 2 kegs worth. If it's a total flop, then that's not huge.
Right.
If it's something that we want to continue in our production, then we can do that.
Yeah.
The downside, one of the biggest downsides I would say, is the time invested to brewing on such a small system and just the variability that comes with it, because we're not brewing even 15 barrels at once where you get a run of beer that is very consistent and then you can reproduce that over and over. Where we're brewing week after week, there are just some of those flexibilities and some of those variances that just work out over time. But
I think that ends up being, for us right now, it is a positive to be able to brew on a smaller system. Right now, we're discounting our labor. We're trying to kill ourselves to just get into a good, stable spot and build for the future.
Right.
And our recipe development is much more rapid because we brew more often.
Definitely.
You know, if we were on a 10-barrel system and we brewed once a month, that recipe development would take forever.
Sure.
Most of our recipes are based on our homebrew recipes, so we know what they should be like. We know where we want them to be. But we can brew the same recipe 5 times in a month and drastically improve where we're trying to get to if we're feeling like we're just not
there.
We're
able to make tweaks, just minute things very quickly.
Kind of on the fly almost.
Yeah, it's like you make it once and we maybe want a little more of this, a little less of that, try something slightly different. And so the very next time we make it, we implement that. And so the turnaround time is really quick.
Yeah, it's just more reps more often.
If labor didn't matter, if it wasn't a factor, I think it's beneficial for most breweries to be on a little bit smaller system, but it just comes down to like how many kegs can you produce with that same amount of labor. If it takes 6 hours to brew a batch and you get 2 kegs out of it, and it takes 6 hours to brew a batch and you get 20 kegs out of it, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer on that side, and people lean.
Yeah, I mean, there's that advantage long-term with distribution and things like that. But it's also, you know, like I said, there's some advantages getting to play around a little in.
Definitely.
Yeah. Correct.
And we get to be a little bit more playful because we can get away with it a little bit more because we're not as committed to that big volume all at once. So.
Yeah.
We have fun with that.
That's good. Well, all right. We're going to, I think what we're going to do, guys, speaking of all this beer We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with some beers, and we're going to taste some beers and talk about some beers. How's that sound?
Sounds okay.
Sounds okay. Katie says okay. Everyone else?
Yeah, I'm down.
All right,
guess.
Perfect. Okay. All right, guys. We'll be right back after these messages.
Well, hello there. I'm Andrew from Panspinning Studios, and I want to share with you from the good book of Never-Ending Random Discussion.
Again, I trust you are putting your valuables in the center of your living rooms as previously instructed. Good Lord, I hope that's previously instructed.
The Never-Ending Random Discussion is a collection of funny and interesting people sitting down to be random.
Why is she naked?
Those eyes
Jesus
are so piercing.
It's...
I forgot that she had tiny little animal eyes, like beady little black eyes. Oh dear God.
Why is she... Why is she covered in frosting? That's weird. Good. That's like a cake thing. That's not for donuts.
It's your favorite flavor.
Anything can happen, and anything does happen. Not that I'm sexist, but kitchens need to stay in women. I went with it.
Kitchens need to stay in women. That's Andrew Reisenhuber, 2016.
Find the show at celebrategeek.com/nerd. Tune in and thank me later. Pants pending.
All right, guys, thanks for hanging out through that brief commercial break. We are still in Moscow. I know we did not return to Spokane yet. We've got a bunch of beers in front of us. Before we do that, as always, guys, go to pantspending.com. Check out all the shows on the network. We've got a lot of new stuff coming. I know we've been talking about that for a while, but had a couple of pilot episodes we've done recently, which you'll be hearing soon. If you go to Patreon.com/PantsPending, you can hear some of the exclusive pilot episodes just for our special listeners. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe, get that exclusive behind-the-scenes content of the network. And be sure to go to Social Hour calendar, check out all the dates. I'm all over the place coming up in the next couple weeks. And, yeah. That's it for the advertising. Now we're going to drink some beer. You guys ready?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to let whoever wants to, Andy, or you, who's you want to lead the way?
I think we'll let Leah describe
right,
the beer.
Leah,
oh, man.
Lead the way. Tell us where to go. Our life is in your hands.
All right. So I will describe the scene. We have our four beers that we currently have on tap. And then we have two bonus beers, Secret from the Cold Room, that we'll taste at the... Let's do those at the end, I guess.
All right.
Yeah, but save a little beer just in case you need to wash them out.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's... I start at the top of your taster. That first one, that one, yep. This is our Kolsch recipe.
That would be the McCall... We'll
yes,
call that,
on
maybe?
Our Idaho taster boards.
Yeah. All right.
Idaho-shaped taster.
Oh, got it. Yeah, I was... Yeah.
So
you call this beer the McCall?
That's what I thought too. No, I was right.
I don't know. My Idaho geography might be a little off, but
it's close.
It's in the radius.
It's like
of
Kamei,
McCall.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hey. Wow.
Yeah.
Local.
So. Okay.
So the Kolsch style is the lightest one that we brew currently. It's just an easy drinker, perfect for the summertime or the wintertime. It's great for people who aren't quite into craft beer yet, but they're ready to kind of dabble their toes in.
Sure.
This is one that we made, I think I may have said earlier, for our dad to kind of get him out of the mass market. So.
A good lawnmower beer.
Yeah.
You call it. You know, just something.
Yeah.
Like.
Post-run
yeah.
beer.
This is one that we love taking to the river.
You, before you babysit your niece and nephew beer.
Perfect.
You know,
yeah. So I'll let you guys taste and.
Definitely a light beer. Very good though. It's got a lot of. I like it. It's got a real crisp body to it, and a lot of pop to it. I like a beer that has a you know, doesn't fall flat. It just gives you that real good snap, you know.
Well, I think a lot of times Kolsch's come off with no flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like it's
right.
super light, but it still's got some good flavor to
right.
it. That you're like, I could have 10 of these.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. And we might.
Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a balance for sure. I mean, you know, the lighter the beer is, the harder it is to make well.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing there to hide off flavors.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so to get a good, clean flavor without any off flavors is difficult to do. But when it works really well.
Yeah.
So this comes in right at 5%, maybe slightly above that, 5.2. But just an easy drinker. I don't know. One of our fan favorites.
Very good. yeah, speaking of fans, the brewery's starting to fill up. They just opened the doors, and like at least 120 people are in here now. Yeah. So it's no.
We might get kicked out.
Yeah.
Divided by 10, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not bad. I'm not good at math, so bad with numbers. Yeah, no, that's a great Kolsch. Like I said, crisp, easy drinking. Like Katie said, it has some personality, it has some flavor to it still. It's not just boring. And
it serves a purpose.
Yeah.
For sure.
And this is one of the staples. So you kind of have four beers that are your regular, your kind of
usual suspects. Regular styles. So we only have the four tap slots. So we try to keep something light and easy like the Kolsch. It will rotate with that wheat ale when it's available. And then we kind of keep just like our scotch rotates with the stout kind of back and forth. So we kind of keep a good variety, but not necessarily the same four all the time.
Got it.
Yeah, we're a little limited just in our ability to have extra taps right now, the way the tap room goes stout on. And, you know, kind of try to keep as much variety as we can so that we can still have that beer conversation with people when they come in, even being limited to four taps.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's like, yeah, it's good to have a little variety and kind of
Absolutely.
Cover the board. Yeah. So.
Are we ready for next?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so next we'll do what's located in the center. We'll call that Sun Valley, Idaho.
Yeah, that's like no man's land.
That's like Stanley,
poor,
Idaho.
Poor Hemingway.
You've never been there. That's the Idaho you've never been to.
I've been more places in Idaho than you'd believe.
So this is our Northwest IPA. It's the IPA that we're running for the fall and winter seasons. We did have a summer IPA that was quite a bit different. So this one's a little bit bigger, quite a bit bigger malt background, comes in close to 6.5%. The featured hop is Mosaic, which has been...
I was going to say, I could taste the Mosaic hops in that. They're my favorite. I love definitely that dankiness for sure.
We've had fun playing around with the Mosaic.
Yeah, some funky blueberry in there.
Yeah, oh, this is bomb.
Just a little more bold. Yeah, it definitely gets that flavor, flavor out.
Yeah, this is a IPA for IPA lovers. It's not a super hop bomb, but it definitely packs a little bit of a punch.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and this is one of our longtime homebrewing recipes. In fact, we usually make the same kind of malt bill for this and then mix in different hops. And so one of the iterations of this when we use Citra hops at home is one of my favorite beers that I've ever drank anywhere. And obviously I'm a little bit biased, but... the base of this recipe is so good that it's just really adaptable for some of the fun new hops that are out, Citra and Mosaic. And we used one earlier this year called Belma, which had a lot of strawberry notes in it. And it just is a good base, a good malt base for some fun hop additions.
Yeah. Well, like a good Northwest IPA, you know, a little more hop forward, a little more powerful.
A little more in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Kate is the IPA expert. She's the one who loves the IPAs.
Yeah,
how's that?
I would drink the shit out of this. Well, I will drink the shit
out
of this.
All right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'm going to finish that, though. I'm just going to keep it going. I can't leave a beer behind.
That would be offensive.
Yeah, that's just rude.
You don't have to wait for me. I'm just doing my
thing. No, yeah, I'm not. I'm waiting for me right now. I still haven't drank my beer yet.
Well, this has nothing to
sorry
do.
We gave you the 12-ounce pours that you have to kind of...
Pound it.
Actually, I did a podcast with a brewery one time, and they, instead of tasters, they literally brought out 9 full pints.
Yeah, they're testing you at that point.
Did they bring out tater tots, too, so you can, like, not pass the fuck out?
I fucking won, that's for sure. Luckily, they have a hotel attached to their brewery, so
roll yourself on over there.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's a good ploy on their part. Like, you were planning on going home that night, but they're you're going
to
stay in
our
hotel.
You're going to pay a night's rent.
Yeah. The nice thing is I was in a place where I happen to know the sheriff, and I'm not like a sheriff, like literally the sheriff of the county. And I ended up actually going to his house for dinner, and he's like, hey, just if you get in any trouble tonight, just call me. And I'm like,
Well,
carte blanche to do whatever I want tonight.
Right,
then.
Yeah, that's a free pass.
like, thank you.
That's great.
So, he should never have told you that.
I know. Well, he knows me too well. So.
Okay, what do we got next?
The next one up is our pale ale. So this is a staple that we've really come to love. It wasn't necessarily a homebrew recipe, but just a fun. It's pretty hoppy for a pale, but that works in this part of the country.
Yeah. I was going to say, it looks a little more, you know, a little more orange than yeah. golden for a pale. So I was assuming a little hop forward on that.
Definitely. And it is a little bit bigger at about 5.8%. So
That's really good, though. It's got a little bit of hoppiness, but it's certainly not, you know, so many pales are essentially just an IPA called a pale.
Right.
That still tastes like a pale without feeling like, oh, you just sold me an IPA dressed as a pale.
The thing we really love that we were able to do with this pale recipe is use some Idaho hops. So it has the Idaho 007. They may have a new name now, but that's what we call them.
Yeah.
Somewhat local hops that are fun to use, and people enjoy that as well. So.
Yeah, anything local is always good, right?
Right.
Where are they grown?
Good question.
Idaho?
South Idaho, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Somewhere in
Boise
right
area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here?
Right here.
Directly where
near,
that third
just whatever
near where
the
pail
cup
is located on the taster board.
Yeah.
As
oh, just,
fact.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's...
See what we did there?
Look at that. Perfect. Look at you guys.
Yeah, we actually... The pail and one other beer that we've made are kind of pushing against those trends of just hot bombing every beer, where the pail has a hot presence to it, but it fits into the balance of the beer. And even our fresh hop beer that we did that just blew last week, and it used really local hops, like a mile away hops from a local farm. And instead of making a hop bomb out of it, we made just a really delicate beer that showcased the delicate hops that we used.
Yeah.
And so it was really well balanced, and it drank. It was probably a little bit less hoppy than mm-hmm. our pale that we have here.
Yeah.
But with that same kind of fresh hop flavor and feel to it, and it was really well received, where most people think that they're getting a fresh hop beer and it's just going to be, you know, a hot blast in their mouth and burn their taste buds off. But it was just a real well-balanced beer.
The nice thing about a good fresh hop beer, too, though, is you get, it's not always the power of the hops, but you get that aroma, mm-hmm. that floral
yeah.
notes up front that are just, instead of the back end just blowing you out, it's just like a really floral,
and you get that
aromatic
earthiness that you just you can't get from pellets or you know, from other ways that you put hops in your beer.
Right.
So,
yeah, definitely.
I can see a lot of people that are not really sure where they're at with the beer scale of like left to right. You know, mm-hmm. it's a good, like, a good medium range beer.
Yeah.
To, like, decide
it's
where
you want
to go.
It's a good place to enter.
It. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, without going too light. You know, you don't take them to the Kolsch where it's extra light, you know, kind of challenge those taste buds a little bit, but don't push them right over the edge.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it helps with people that are new to give them a beer that has some more bold flavors in it
mm-hmm.
to, you know, you had the Kolsch and it tastes a little bit like malt and not really like hops, but you give them a pale and you say, can you taste, you know, this in the hops, this citrus flavor, the piney flavor.
Yeah. And you can guide them a little bit.
To help show them that's a hop flavor that
you're
not
scaring
you're
them with that flavor too.
Right.
Because
you
give them something like your IPA, they might be like, "Oh shit, no, thank you."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for you, you're gonna say yes, please.
I'm gonna say yes, please. Can I have two? Yeah.
One for each hand.
Yes.
Oh yes, exactly. Oh man, there's good. We're only halfway there. Do you guys have a hotel attached to your brewery?
we have an upstairs. We can throw
a
cot up or
that's
something.
That's fine. Yeah, I like it. That's
cool. You can come over to my house, and we got a spare bedroom. Got a little baby that sleeps in there, so you'll be on baby duty.
I feel like that's not a spare bedroom, then. That's just called the baby's bedroom.
a thinly veiled boy.
Is it your
babysitter?
Baby?
Yeah. Will you please come babysit?
Yeah, come babysit. I'll
drink the beer. You babysit.
Now it makes sense why you invited us out.
Yeah.
Got it. Yes.
Please keep drinking.
Yeah, I like how it's like it's a spare bedroom. There's a baby that sits there. You know, he pays rent. Like, we don't, like, it's just some baby. It's not even your baby.
She's just there most of the time.
Yeah, it's just a baby. Yeah, she comes and goes. She works nights.
Yeah.
Walgreens.
She just sleeps there and other things.
Her name's Tanya. No big deal.
Cool.
All right, Leah, what's next on the list here?
So last in the commercially produced Moscow Brewing lineup, not including the two bonus beers, is our Scotch Ale.
Mm. This would be Pocatello.
Yeah, Pocatello on the tasting board.
Listen, this beer is way better than Pocatello. Okay.
Most things are.
it's like a
shots fired in Idaho.
That came out.
Like an Idaho Falls beer. You're like, ooh, God, that's no way to describe a beer. listen, I've been to Pocatello. Not great.
And you came back.
Yeah.
So the Scotch Ale.
No one stays. They just drive on through. Drive on through.
This, in addition to the Northwest IPA, were two of our homebrew favorites, and we just had to keep making it. It's a little more roasty. It's not super smoky like some Scotch Ales can be, but we really like the subtle bitterness. It's not too big, not too small, kind of right in the middle.
Yeah, this is, in my opinion, the way a Scotch should be.
Yeah.
You know, you get those, there's some that go so smoky that you don't, you know, it's, I like in a, you know, some espresso, I like some smokiness in a beer, but when you go too far to one side, you...
It's like licking a barbecue. No, thank you.
Yeah, not ideal. You know, fool me once.
Well, and we really love showcasing this beer to people who like dark beer, because there's, at least around here, there's not many Scotch ales that are made, and a lot of people are not familiar with it, and you kind of present it to them as an alternative. We sometimes swap it for our red as another malty beer, and it's a little bit more on the burnt, smoky espresso spectrum, but it's not into a stout or porter range where it's going to be strong flavors of those. And so you present it to people as another option of a cool beer style that they may not know about that they would actually love.
Yeah. Yeah, this tends, in my opinion, to lean a little closer to like a really mild brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With that little caramely notes and things
like
that.
Yeah, a little bit of toffee
too.
In there. Yep. Yeah.
So, and I
well, I think it's nice also because you guys have such a small system that people come in and they're like, oh, I love reds or I love this or that.
Right.
And they've, like you just said, like a lot of people have never heard of a Scotch Ale. So this is a great opportunity to like, here you go.
Yeah.
I love this.
We do get the random people who think they're going to get a glass of scotch.
Oh, yeah. No, we barrel age a lot of our beers too.
Sure.
And so we'll have like a gin barrel this or that or a bourbon this or that. And they're like, can I get a shot? I'm like, no, honey.
No.
Yeah. We're still a brewery.
Right.
Yeah, you definitely put a little marker next to their tab when they are requesting the 16-ounce scotch.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, just like,
you know that one might be a troublemaker later on.
Right. That's what we call a heavyweight.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I like those guys.
No judgment.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
You don't get ice with your beer, sorry.
No, right?
No.
Just a straw.
Yeah.
So how many recipes do you guys actually have that are in your regular rotation? You've got four, obviously, on tap now, but how many do you have total?
So the only way I can do this is not in my head, so I'll just
start
shouting.
Do you need to use other people's fingers, too?
Yeah, I might need someone's shoes off.
Okay.
Right.
So we have these four, then we have our stout, we have the red. For a brief moment, we did a double red, which was kind of just a playing around sort of period, which was received very well. So that's seven. We have our wheat rye that's hasn't been out yet. What else am I missing?
Did you say stout?
I think I said stout. We're going to do the gingerbread porter later this year. We have the summer IPA.
The wheat. Oh, you said the wheat.
We did a summer IPA. We did a couple other renditions of the Northwest IPA earlier in this year. So we're just keeping it on for a longer term this time. The last time we released it, it was just when it's gone sort of thing. And we used different hops.
So there's probably, I would say there's nine beers that we could pull out at any one time and rotate through, and probably 11 or 12 that we've done total so far, including seasonals. Or like we did a one-off for our grand reopening, the double red. So
we want to have the consistency in the main six or seven that we're constantly rotating, but we do have a little arsenal of other things that we're pulling out from time to time.
Yeah.
And actually, when we first opened, it was the very end of March, and we had brewed Kolsch and Scotch, thinking we're going into the summer months, and people are going to want Kolsch, and we just need to kind of show it to them and teach them what it is, and Scotch will be dark enough for everyone.
Right.
And almost instantly, we got some feedback, well, what's darker than that? What's darker than that? Well, you don't want darker than that. You know, it's going to be June soon.
Yeah.
But, of course, this June was the same as March.
Yes.
And so we, as soon as we started to get that feedback, we did make our stout right away. And it was one of our top sellers all through the summer.
Right.
Then. And it was just that ability to kind of push our brew schedule to the side and squeak something else in there. And that you don't really have if you brew on a 15-barrel system and you made – 30 kegs of scotch, those got to go
before
you do anything else.
Well, it is surprising how many people drink super dark beers in the summertime.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really cool, too. I mean, I tell people that when, and you get people who come in and they kind of size up your menu and say, well, you know, you're brewing a stout in the middle of August, and it's, well, yeah, like, would you say that about our IPA? Like, if it were December, would you say, why are you brewing an IPA in December?
Right, exactly.
It's not a winter beer.
Yeah.
It's silly. Like, beer is beer, and I'm going to drink a cold stout.
If it makes you happy, like, good for you. I'm not going to do that, but...
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm going to drink a cold stout in the middle of August the same way I would drink a warm stout in December.
See, I think, for me, it's like, I drink more in the summer. And I like dark beers better. Mm-hmm. So in the summertime, I end up drinking darker beers more. I mean, I'm the guy that's like floating down the river drinking like an Abyss from Deschutes or something.
Yes.
Like that's my, like, I'm just straight molasses. And then the sun comes around to winter, like my whole palate's backwards. That's not shocking to anyone who knows me. And I get, you know, wintertime comes around. I'm like, okay, I've been drinking heavy beer all year. I need to, like, I'm just going, I coast into like some ambers and some lighter beers every now and then. And yeah, I enjoy it.
Yeah. That is one of the challenges of having just the four tap handles, is kind of getting all the variances that people want throughout the entire year. Cause what we might prefer is not necessarily what the customer base prefers.
Oh,
and so
totally.
We definitely try our best to keep that variety on. Sometimes our lineup's a little bit darker than other times, but you know what? It's fun to expose yourself to new flavors.
Totally.
Right.
To be fair, honestly, even if you have 50, you're not going to make everybody happy.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it allows you, again, like we spoke on earlier, touch on the fact that if you don't have a certain beer that someone wants, like you mentioned, God, what brewery? What were you saying besides the scotch that you do the
stout?
Yeah. It allows you to kind of be like, well, we don't have the stout, but we do have the scotch, and you're introducing someone to something that they may not have had, and then all of a sudden they might like that, and that might get them a bridge to a different style of beer or a different style of beer. So you're bridging gaps for people. So it's almost a benefit for some people instead of that, because people can get stuck in their ways, be like, come in and I get this beer, this is all I get, this is the only thing I get. Whereas, you know, like we spoke on earlier, I like breweries that make new stuff. I like ones that are consistent. I can be like, okay, I can always get their XYZ beer. You know, their amber is always going to be on point. Great. But also,
well, it's
I can
fun
go
to try
there.
Something new and then just be like, man, that wasn't my favorite. I'm going to go back to that.
Right.
Yeah.
That
you
IPA
have the
that I love.
Yeah.
And that's what we kind of pride ourselves on, being able to show people what other beers they might like if they're receptive to trying something new. And, you know, if somebody likes stout and we don't have it, we'll show them the scotch and explain to them the flavors that are similar that they might still enjoy.
Right.
Although I had a lady earlier this summer that we had the stout on, and she ordered a taster of it, and she asked me while I was pouring it how stout our stout is, and I said, well, it's stout. I would say
that's my favorite.
And so she tried it, and she's like, you know, it's not stout enough for me. I like my stouts really stout. And
it's
walked
like the
out.
Worst who's on first ever.
Right. And I'm like, well, if you're not even willing to like expand, you know, on what you're interested in, I don't know what you mean when you say like the stout isn't stout enough.
Well, you're generally trying to like help her, like guide her, like I just better understand what
words
you're
like
using.
If you like stouts because they're malty, we've got other malty, you know.
Yeah.
And if you like them because they're smoky, I've got other smoky.
Yeah.
Yeah. People get restricted to the style and not the variance in the style, so they get so committed to that.
And they had it that one time at that one place, and that's how it should always taste.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, I do love stouts, but like I also don't love that heavy of a beer. Like, I like stouts that are a little bit, that are still, you know, good, but don't, that I want to be able to drink a couple.
Yeah.
Right. You don't feel
rich.
Like you ate dinner after you had one.
Right. Like, just want to, you know, take a nap afterwards.
So, speaking of stouts.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I actually don't have an introduction for this beer besides.
You know what? I will take
the blame for it.
So, these, sorry, go ahead.
Andy. These are my homebrew recipes that, did we talk about? how
these came out of like a box from a from
yeah,
like a, like
we were,
a
Andy
storage
and I,
unit from 18 years ago.
Together,
it's like
and
from
then
a, from an episode of Storage Wars.
Yeah,
like
this
somebody,
the cap on this says it was bottled 6/11/2012 with the initials TMS, which stands for Turtle Milk Stout, named after the family
real turtle,
turtle
milk. Yeah.
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 What is turtle milk?
It's the milk from a turtle.
So, a little fun fact about this turtle milk stout is it is actually the base recipe for our stout
okay,
that
hold
we do
on.
Put on
I
tap.
I
want to
clear something up. This has milk in it from a turtle.
Yes.
Or so we made you believe.
Who milked the turtle? Yeah.
But, you know, it's homebrew recipe. It's proprietary.
Okay,
we can't talk about stuff like that.
No. Okay.
So it might have been illegal.
Hypothetically, if someone were to...
No turtles were harmed in the making of
like
this beer.
Are we talking like a box turtle?
In fact, I'm fairly certain a turtle was pleasured in
red
the making
nose slider.
Of this beer.
I mean, I fucking hope so.
I don't think those are nipples you were milking then.
I mean, if milk comes out, then what else can it be?
That's...
All right, and now we're drinking. So
yeah, so now that your expectations are really high for
yeah.
this beer.
So this is a 5-year-old homebrew recipe that we pulled out of the old cooler box.
Yeah, this has been through two moves.
I feel like this is some like Japanese game show I'm on right now where you have to like drink the turtle milk.
Yeah. You're being secretly recorded.
Milk. I think I mean actually recorded. The okay, hold on. We're gonna make sure we're okay. Yeah. So I'm gonna drink. Let's be real. This is not the weirdest thing I've put in my mouth ever.
Really, you know, to be honest, we only bring these out for special occasions.
Well, thank you.
So
you considered us.
We don't serve this to just anyone. Nor do we serve it on tap.
We don't serve it. Period.
FYI.
Yeah.
Too litigious. People are too litigious.
I feel we're all hesitant to actually. Take
no,
a
I'm not. This is my beer.
Oh my god, the nose on that is fucking amazing. I haven't drank it yet, but
it's aged. It's well aged.
The turtle milk has really
it's been
come out.
Stored in
oh my god, that's fucking delicious.
An environment where it's well the same as outdoors, so it's 20 degrees in the winter and it's 90 degrees
I'm
in the summer.
Catch a turtle and milk the shit out of that thing
right
now. Right?
Mm-hmm. You have to ask permission first.
Right, consent. Consent. this is
it definitely has the homebrew flavor to it. If you drink homebrew or like especially when it's not all grain homebrew, it's got that kind of caramely sugar.
I just need to say that I genuinely enjoy this beer a lot.
Yeah. I feel like I'm trying to figure out like what I'm like tasting right now. I mean,
besides the
turtle
secret
milk.
Ingredient.
Yeah.
Turtle
yeah.
milk.
Yeah.
Quote unquote milk.
But it makes me
turtle lactose.
Yeah.
hold on, people. You can definitely taste that. Ooh, wait, hold on.
Yeah, now you took a big sip. Now you got it.
You can definitely taste mystery stuff that I have no idea. This is like this holds all the mysteries of the Orient.
It's the mystery of time that you're tasting.
It's true.
Mystery of time. Worst Tyler Perry movie ever. the mystery of time. I can't even begin to describe it.
It's smoky.
And fuck all you people, you'll never get to drink it because they won't serve it to you.
Nope. Yeah.
But it's
I mean,
delicious.
If you bring us enough beer, we'd probably trade you a little bit.
Okay. Okay.
We have a couple bottles.
There's only a little bit left.
What would it take to pry one of these away from you when I leave?
We're not going to set that bar, but if someone wants to try to, we'll accept all.
Babysitting.
Yeah. Babysitting Tanya. The
one night with Tanya.
One night with Tanya. Oh God, that sounds
Tanya.
Like
Tanya.
all right. There's a bad joke there somewhere. Never mind. We're gonna move on. I'm gonna keep drinking this beer. This beer is great. You guys should serve this beer.
We should find
some turtles.
We serve a variation. I think I said earlier it is the base recipe for the stout that we have on tap. Our stout we don't put any turtle milk into or any other lactose containing products.
The way you guys keep saying turtle milk makes me really wonder what is actually in this beer.
Google it.
Or don't. I'm not going to. Doesn't matter.
No, we're going to Google this later.
We're
going to
Google it later. Okay.
Well, yeah, I actually don't remember why I called it turtle milk stout, other than I have a pet turtle, which is a whole other really interesting story.
Was she drinking with you
the
when
turtle.
You like, were creating this concoction?
It's not a she. Oh.
Yeah.
Like, as I said earlier.
So there may not actually be any lactose at all in that milk.
Protein.
Right.
Okay. That's fine.
Well, you know what matters? It makes your mouth happy, so that's fine.
Question everything I ever knew in my life.
Second mystery beer?
Yeah, so this last one, this is a raspberry wheat. I think this is a 2013 vintage, like I had mentioned. This beer was before we figured out how to rein in the raspberries, and when it was initially produced, it was bright pink.
So let me ask you, was this was it raspberry puree, raspberry syrup,
This one...
These are frozen raspberries.
Was either, pasteurized raspberries, or it was the last version that had raspberry extract, which is terrible.
It definitely has a very pungent raspberry nose, which I enjoy because raspberries are amazing. So...
Oh no! This was first time with pasteurized raspberries.
Yeah, this is a real raspberry.
The tartness of it still.
I actually like that. I like it a lot.
I like that as like even though it's not a sour, it kind of gives you that.
It's
of
sour.
That's what I was just thinking. Like you could. It's something if you age and got into that sour, got the right yeast in there and got into the sour.
I was going to ask you, have you guys ever brewed a sour before or a goza or anything along those lines?
We have not yet.
Is that
something we enjoy. We're just not set up to intermingle the sours right now. I mean, we could do like a kettle sour, but those aren't really what we're huge fans of.
Yeah.
On a smaller system, I mean, the yeast for sours is so wild.
And we don't,
that you have to worry about
we don't
where
risk
it,
that.
Yeah,
no,
it, like you can contaminate
totally
so
sure.
much. So, yeah.
It is surprising for me at Iron Goat where I work that we sell, that's probably our number one best-selling beer is our sours.
Yeah. We try them just about everywhere we go, you know, and you get good ones and you get bad ones. They're pretty popular right now.
The cool thing about sours is it's beer for beer lovers.
Yeah.
It is similar enough to cider or wine that it really draws in a whole nother population.
Totally.
And so it is, you know, pleasing in a lot of different, to a lot of different people.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are genuinely surprised that they like sours.
Yeah.
When they first try them, they're like, whoa, I don't know.
Well, I think it's one of those things. I think you're either all in or you're all out. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know anyone who's like, just dabble in sours. You're like, you're either committed, you love them. I personally love sours, but
I don't know. I think it's, for me, from my observation, I think some people like immediately love it, or they're hesitant, and then I always encourage people just like, you gotta give it a few tries.
Give it a couple passes.
Yeah,
because it is a pretty gnarly, intense flavor in your mouth for sure.
We impose a 2-sip minimum, or we like to encourage people like, if the first sip doesn't get you, try it just one more time, because a lot of times that first flavor is just wild for your taste buds.
That palate going,
and then the second sip, it's a little bit more approachable.
Well, also you need to not, when you sip a beer or anything, you need to not, people do that one tiny sip. I'm like, you kind of got to get most of a mouthful and like let it kind of beat around in there and let it hit the whole palate.
Swish it. Make noises.
Right. Yeah, be uncomfortable. Touch someone inappropriately next to you. Like just make the whole thing weird.
Yeah.
And then you'll know for sure if the beer is good for you.
Man, it's a good thing you know a sheriff.
Yeah. I've known ones I didn't want to know either. So that brings me to an interesting question. As brewers and beer lovers, connoisseurs, everyone around the table, Kate, answer this question too, please. Favorite style of beer? Mm. What's your favorite style of beer?
I always go back to IPAs, I think. They need to be well done. It's a little bit... IPAs are definitely overrated right now, I think, and they're overproduced.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The whole hazy IPA, East Coast style IPA thing is kind of losing me a little bit.
Same here.
But I'm also a bit of a beer nomad, you know? I like that I may not have the same beer twice in 1 month.
Yeah,
When I go to the store, I look for things that I've never had before. But if you're going to twist my arm, I'm going to have an IPA or a pale.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Leah?
Yeah, I'm just going to echo all of that. I love trying all different styles, and if there is something, since I know that I lean towards IPAs and pales, I try to try to direct myself other ways when given the opportunity.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you just want something that you know you're going to like, kind of that a little bit more hop forward is typically what I go to. Although that changes when you go to different parts of the country.
For sure. Yeah.
Since we're from the Northwest and we know what a great Northwest IPA or just a hoppy beer can be, that's what we like, maybe. But if you even go to Montana or something, mm-hmm. they have great scotches and just more of the malty. And if you get to the Midwest, it's even more different than that.
Sure.
Well, even the East Coast, their version of IPAs are so dramatically different.
Yeah. And I love their IPAs. We just recently were introduced to Trillium Brewery on the East Coast. Mm. And we've had two or three of their IPAs now. And they're huge on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And it's a vastly different beer. And to hold up one of their beers against one of our IPAs, you can see it clear as day how different they are.
Yeah.
And have their own pros and cons.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm from L.A. originally. Lived in the Northwest off and on over the years. But the Northwest IPA is, you know, again, like we talked about earlier, very hot forward, more aromatic, just very, you know, more of a bold, powerful IPA. The West Coast IPA is a little more mild, generally more fruit note forward. You get some hops, but not quite that power the Northwest gives you, or you know, the pininess you'll get in a lot of Northwest IPAs. So, it's very different regionally what you'll get out of your IPA. Yeah. Or any style of beer.
And that's the fun part about it is you can say, I'm an IPA drinker and source them from all over the country or all over the world, you know, and you get different flavors in each one. So that's cool.
Katie, what in your favorite style? It's an IPA also, yeah.
I'm kind of a seasonal drinker. Like, wintertime, I love my stouts and porters.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down. I mean, I'll drink everything all the time. I love everything. But summertime, I love sours. Sours and Gozas, can't, like, go wrong.
Right.
Yeah. I had so many of those this summer.
What about least favorite style of beer, guys?
What?
Least favorite.
I kind of steer away from, like, blondes and pilsners. They're not enough flavor for me.
Sure.
Yeah, I feel the same way as that. I mean, I prefer strong flavors in not just drink, but also in food.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're sitting down to, like, a full glass of beer, that you're just going to enjoy that by itself, I definitely want some flavors in
there. If you're
going
to do it, you might as well do it.
If it's with a meal or something like that, or you're having this full meal with lots of different flavors in the food, then a blonde or a pilsner a lager definitely fits that scene, so... I think I'm a situational drinker.
Yeah.
Depends on where I'm at, what I'm doing.
Time, place, season, weather,
yeah, like if
whatever.
I'm driving, I probably want something lighter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just
with
like
a straw.
That.
Yeah, with a straw, something
to...
Yeah,
with a funnel.
Know, right,
yeah,
something
absolutely.
To hide from the
funnel,
cops.
For sure. That's a lot easier.
Listen,
there's
a distracted driving law in Washington State now. They certainly don't like... You're not allowed
true.
To drink anymore.
Yeah, you can't even drink water.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Let alone beer and smoke my legal weed.
Yeah.
Assholes.
You have to go to Washington for that.
Yeah. Andy, least favorite?
Oh, mine is pretty straightforward. Really, it comes down to yeast. Mm. I can't do lagers, and I can't do Belgians.
Andy hates Belgians.
And it's not for lack of trying. I would love to find a Belgian that I like. And I've found a few that I can tolerate, and I've found a bunch that I'll choke down. But, man, Belgians and lagers, I just can't get on board. It's the same thing with, like, red wine for me.
Sure.
Like, I want to appreciate it, but I just can't.
Have you ever been to, I'll bleep this name out in post, but Selkirk Brewery in Post Falls, Idaho?
I haven't
where?
Been.
Selkirk.
Oh, God.
I haven't been there, but I feel like I try Belgians whenever they come up in front of me, and I've yet to find one that I can say, that's my star.
So Selkirk does what I would call an American version of a Belgian, which I'm not a huge Belgian guy either, to be honest with you. Like, they're not really my thing. There's something about them that doesn't do it for me. They kind of do an American Belgian, which very Belgian-inspired. With a lot of the yeast strains and things they use. And it made me turn the corner a little bit, and then he introduced me to a couple of more traditional ones, and it kind of, again, bridged that gap for me. So I would suggest trying some of the Selkirks. Yeah, at a Post Falls, Idaho.
I think I just need that gateway beer.
It's a good gateway beer for a Belgian. So, you know, I mean, not that you don't have enough beers to drink already. So, Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's all the beers we have. But let's talk real quickly before we go. Long term for the brewery. What's we walked through the brewery. You guys are running on a little bit of a smaller system right now. You talked about potentially upgrading things like that. What's the what does Moscow Brewery look like in a year, 5 years from now?
Yeah. So we talked about this briefly, maybe before we went on, but we're not looking for world domination or even, you know, statewide or, the Pacific Northwest. We're really focused locally.
Yeah.
We are trying to source products locally, and we're trying to connect with the community. I mean, we grew up here. We're from a small farming town just, you know, not too far south of here. And what we would really like is just to be a strong part of this community. And so we're looking in the next year to start doing some distribution, which will all be local, and probably a little bit in Washington, just, within, say, a 30-mile radius.
Sure.
But to build our brand and build our name here, because this is the area that we love, and we want to, you know, give back, but also we just want to, like, share our passion for this with the people in the area.
Yeah. All right. Leah, anything to add to that?
I think we just go from the history of the original Moscow Brewery that we talked about at the beginning, and how, you know, back then each town had their own watering hole and it was a brewery, and we want to live up to that legacy, and we want to be the place for the locals as well as more of the transient population with the students that come in for University of Idaho, and just be the go-to place for this community. And eventually, if all goes well, maybe we'll venture out a little bit further, but right now our commitment is just to being the local fan favorite, and if we can produce a good product and get that stamp of approval from our customer base, then that's really what we're after.
Perfect.
Yeah, okay. Definitely what we're after really is just the quality beer and to build our brand on quality. We're not going to have a restaurant that serves great food and you come for the food and drink a beer.
Yeah.
We're about the beer, and we want people who come through here to be able to leave knowing more about beer in general, even if they don't love our beer, to have more knowledge about what beer they might like.
Right. Yeah, it's great. It's good to educate, good to be a part of it, and it sounds like you guys are doing great. Katie, any last?
Yes. Are you guys ever planning on submitting beers to WABL?
Obviously, we've thought about it a ton. Yeah, I think in the future, I mean, right now we're only 6 months old.
Yeah.
And so we're just really getting our feet under ourselves. And we hope to in the future be able to kind of participate in more events like that.
I mean, like, there's no like goal set like by like this time next year, or just like just in general, you want to like just do it.
I think
if you don't do it, then I think that's stupid. But
right. I think we're just not quite sure exactly what that looks like for us right now, since this is a brand new path that we're just blazing for ourselves one day at a time.
And we're fairly conservative in our growth. We want to make sure that we're growing the right way.
Absolutely.
And not stretching ourselves too far out in ways that we can't uphold. We want to make sure that our word is kind of our bond, and to be old school about it, that if we tell a place in Spokane that we'll serve them beer and that we'll give them kegs, that we don't ever have to back out of that saying, well, you know, we're a little bit too stretched right now, we're going to pull away from this. We want to make sure that we grow as aggressively as we can do transparently and confidently.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I think that's awesome. I like that.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
That's it. Okay. All right, guys. Well, come down to Moscow Brewing. They're at 630 North Allman Street in Moscow, Idaho. Come check them out. Great people. Great beer. They are open all the time. You'll see them grow. Check out the beers. It's going to be great. And as for me, I'll be all over the next couple of weeks. I'll be in Richland, Washington, the Joker's Comedy Club. I'll be in Missoula, Montana, I think Sandpoint. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. Oh, and on November 28th, be sure to be at the Roxy Event Center, Cooking Hot Comedy with Amanda Hillman. We're going to be starting that. That's going to be a once-a-week cooking and comedy class from 7:30 to 9:30. Space is limited on those. And, of course, every Sunday, the Social Hour Comedy Showcase at the Riddler Piano Bar, 708 West Riverside Avenue. Be sure to visit that. And go to pantspending.com for all the updates on the network. Check out all the shows. Subscribe, like, give us a good rating on iTunes. Help us climb the charts over there, guys. Okay, any last words, folks?
I just want to say thank you for having us. Yes. It's fun to talk beer with cool beer lovers. And also, shameless plug us real quick.
Absolutely. Where can people find you?
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Moscow Brewing Company. There is one other one that is fairly well known in Russia.
We're
not that one. Although, fun fact for another time, we are actually talking with their head brewer over there, and we are friends with him.
That's awesome.
And so there may be a transcontinental beer works in the future. So watch our Facebook page, because that's where you'll find
it. That's awesome. That's fantastic. All right, check it out, guys. Go like their page again. Come check them out. They are at 630 North Almond Street in Moscow, Idaho. Don't miss it. Moscow. Sorry, Jesus Christ.
It's just going
to get worse.
Nope, okay. It's
okay. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for hanging out, guys. And for the social hour, I am Deese. And for Andy, Leah, and Katie, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, guys. And we will see you next week.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!